And here we are, 9 days into the new year, a lot of people trying to keep to that resolution to lose weight, which brings us to a new book by biochemist Sylvia Tara. It's called The Secret Life of Fat, The Science Behind the Body's Least Understood Organ, and What It Means for You. Sylvia Tara joins us from KUCI in Irvine, California. Welcome.
Thank you so much. It's great to be here.
And one of the things that I want to talk about is the fact that fat was not always hated the way that it is now. We always think of fat as a bad thing, but going back into history, it wasn't that way.
No, that's right. In fact, there was a time in U.S. history where fat was actually quite loved and valued. After the Civil War, there was poverty and there was destruction, and food was hard to come by. And those who had fat were considered privileged and beautiful, and people tried to look like they had fat. And it wasn't until, you know, later, till the economy got a little bit better, food was more available, people started gaining weight again. And that's where there were some warnings from military, from business, from politicians about the nation's growing girth.
Why? What was it that changed that made people all of a sudden fear fat?
I think just that, you know, it used to be only the select few could afford to have it. Then all of a sudden, when everyone's getting it, people just got a little bit, you know, wary of that, that it's now catching on with everybody. And, you know, created a little bit of an echo chamber, this worry about fat. I mean, even doctors previously had thought fat was not so bad. And they actually, you know, advised fat for helping with contagious disease, helping with nervousness. And that it all just changed when it got to be where a lot of people could have it. And, you know, what happened then is another voice in the chorus against fat would happen to be businesses, entrepreneurs, hucksters who saw this great way to sell all kinds of gimmicks to people who were afraid of fat now. And odd things came in, the tapeworm diet, where people would ingest tapeworm eggs so that the tapeworms would siphon off calories, fat off, reducing soap that was supposed to melt fat under the skin. There's all kinds of ways to make money. And the advertising of these products became another really strong voice in the chorus against fat, to the point now where we have multi, you know, billion-dollar corporations going at this. We spend $60 billion or more on the fight against fat, more than we spend on the war on terror. I think if we're going to spend this much money on fat, you know, we're going to target weapons against it, we have to really understand this enemy that we're fighting. And fat is much more than just a reserve of calories. It's actually quite sophisticated.
Well, and one of the things that you talk about is the fact that we need fat to propagate life.
Yes. Fat is actually an endocrine organ. It produces a number of hormones in our body that our body needs. You know, one of these is really important is leptin. And leptin has vast effects within our body. I mean, fat is tied to brain size, to brain health. It's tied to strong bones. It's tied to our reproduction system and conception even. And so when people lose too much weight, women particularly lose too much weight, they actually can't reproduce. So, you know, fat is vital to life. And because fat is so important, nature tries to protect it. And, you know, through leptin again, one of the effects is leptin has a very, you know, strong direct link to appetite. So when we have a good amount of leptin, we feel pretty satiated and our metabolism's pretty strong. But when we lose fat, because fat produces leptin, we lose leptin too. And with lower leptin, our appetites, you know, shoot through the roof, our metabolism gets lower, and in that way, fat fights, our bodies fight to keep fat on us, to get it back.
And what about exercise? Because as you point out in this book, some of what determines your body composition and the amount of fat you have has to do with genetics, but a lot of people are able to exercise and try to counteract some of that.
Yeah, and exercising in itself releases certain hormones that counteract, you know, where your fat is and how much you have. So some of the hormones that you can use against your fat, you know, growth hormone is one, and that's something that ebbs as we age. Testosterone's another great fat burner, you know, also that ebbs as we age. Adiponectin is another hormone fat makes that actually affects fat distribution. So adiponectin is fat's own way of clearing fats out of the blood and directing them into fat deposits where they belong. In this way, it's like fat is telling the fat in our blood to please come home, please come to these fat deposits. And the good thing about adiponectin is that it's really associated with less visceral fat, the fat under the stomach wall, which is more dangerous, and it tends to deposit fat in the subcutaneous layer, that layer right under the skin that is healthier fat to have. So exercise does help distribute your fat into healthier depots, and it does also affect where your fat is in that way. It's not so much under the stomach wall, it's more in the more healthy subcutaneous layer.
as you look at the research, why is it that some people are able to eat as much as they want and they never gain a pound, and other people have to be very careful and exercise a lot and they still have trouble losing weight?
You know, a number of things. One, if you've yo-yo dieted, you've had this effect to where you have, you know, you now have lost some weight and your leptin is lower and you have a lower metabolism and you're hungry all the time. So that right there is one reason you'll have to eat less going forward, 22% fewer calories less than someone who's at that weight to begin with. And there are other factors that play in, too. You know, certainly genetics has a role here. There are certain genes that actually predispose people to higher appetite. They need more self-control. There's some genes that just create more fat cells. That's going to be another reason some people have more fat. The bacteria we have in our gut has a role here. Some bacteria extract more calories out of our food than other bacteria. And some people have a microbiome that tilts toward more calorie extraction. And so say you're eating a bowl of Cheerios, you know, it might say 100 calories on the label, but in fact, depending on your microbiome, you might be getting 80 calories out of it. You might be getting 100 calories out of it.
We're speaking with Sylvia Tara, whose book is called The Secret Life of Fat, The Science Behind the Body's Least Understood Organ and What It Means for You. And Sylvia Tara, let me ask you about Randy, who you profile in this book, who got scratched by a chicken when he was little. And after that, and because of that, began to gain weight.
Yeah, that's a really fascinating story. So it turns out there are viruses in our environment that are linked with fat. And it's been known about in animal studies for quite some time. Canine distemper virus causes fat in mice. Rouse-associated virus causes fat in chickens. And until, you know, fairly recently, it wasn't really observed with humans. But I tell the story of Nikhil Durander, who actually identified a virus that is linked to obesity in humans, too, and that is AD36. People who have had the virus, when they test positive for ever having the virus, they actually have a 3- to 4-fold greater risk of having obesity. And Randy was one of the people I wrote about who was positive for this virus. And, you know, he got scratched. He thinks it's because of the chicken that he had in his farm. After he had gotten scratched by this chicken, he noticed his appetite greatly increased, and he started putting on fat in huge amounts, more than ever before. And he struggled with this, really, for decades, you know, getting north of 300 pounds. And it wasn't until he crossed paths with Nikhil Durander and Richard Atkinson at University of Wisconsin that he learned about such a virus. Once he identified the causes of his fat, just that knowledge, and knowledge is power here, he was able to really, you know, understand it, do the things he needed to do, increase the exercise, realize that he just can't eat as much as other people because he creates fat more readily. And I think part of what I'm hoping to do with this book is just help people identify, take away some of the fat shaming, the guilt around fat. It's not just sloth and gluttony. There's a number of ways we get fat. There are genetics, there are viruses, there are bacteria. You know, gender plays a role, and our hormones play a role. And you have to consider all of these things when you're trying to lose weight. You might not be eating more than your neighbor, but you might have more fat. And don't feel guilty. It's not because you're failing at your diet. It's because you have to understand your fat.
Well, what have you done? Because you've had your own struggle with weight.
That's right. Even as a child, I gained weight pretty readily. And, you know, through my teen years and my 20s, I had a real struggle to keep it down. And I tried a bunch of different diets. And sometimes I'd lose some weight. I'd lose it temporarily. It would come back. And there were times I even gained weight on some of these diets. And I finally just got really fed up with this. And I'm a scientist by training. And I thought, you know, I'm going to really understand fat. Before I go on one more diet, I have to know everything there is to know about fat. And so that's what I did. And that's the basis, really, for The Secret Life of Fat. And I know I went on a number of diets that didn't work for me. And I think now that I have this knowledge and I'm empowered, I can tailor diets that work for me. And I have finally honed in on one that seems to keep the weight off.
Well, one of the things that you've tried is intermittent fasting, which other people have tried as well. How does that work, and has it worked for you?
It works well. And one of the reasons intermittent fasting works, which is really just fasting for about a 14, 16, you know, 18-hour period, and one of the reasons it's thought to work is that it extends the release of growth hormone overnight. So our growth hormone, which is a fat burner, peaks at night. And if you can extend your fast either in the morning or the night before, you actually can, the thought is you extend the release of growth hormone, which helps bust through fat. And so what I've learned to do is I eat, you know, light breakfast maybe at 9, 10. I'll eat a lunch and a snack at 3, and I'll fast. I'll just have a very long fast overnight. And what I love about that method is I can almost eat whatever I want during the day. As long as I do that fast, it doesn't stay on me. It is not easy to do. It's not for everybody. You could also, you know, fast during the day and eat dinner if dinner is an important part of your life. But something to consider if you've just found you have extremely stubborn fat the way I do.
What's the one thing that you feel really guilty about eating but you do anyway?
Oh, chocolate. No doubt. But you know what I've learned? So I keep a log. This is how I honed in on what I have to do. And what I've noticed is that some things cause me to gain weight and some things don't. Some things that don't are supposed to cause me to gain weight. And amazingly enough, chocolate was one of these things. Mm. It doesn't make me gain weight. As long as I don't eat it, you know, right before bed, I can get away with it.
Lucky you. Sylvia Tara, her book is called The Secret Life of Fat, The Science Behind the Body's Least Understood Organ and What It Means for You. Thanks so much for joining us.
It was terrific to be here. Thank you.